Happy Halloween, fans of the Milwaukee Bucks. Your team is undefeated. They have been spooktacular. That is the only pun I will use on this podcast, but it had to be done. The Bucks playing some incredible basketball, and they're the only undefeated team in the National Basketball Association heading into a huge battle with the Boston Celtics on Thursday. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Bucks podcast. I'm going to be joined shortly by Matt Velasquez, who covers the Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're going to talk about all the crazy things that have gone on with this team. They have just been very, very good. Last time we chatted, they were four games in. They are now seven in. Monday night, they took care of the Toronto Raptors in a high-profile battle between two undefeated teams. It did lose a little bit of luster. Both teams were missing their star player. The Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course, was missing with a concussion, and the Raptors had elected to hold out Kawhi Leonard just to give him some regularly scheduled rest. So it was, I guess you could say, a battle of supporting casts, but the Bucks certainly rose to the occasion and scored a 124-109 victory. Seven players in double figures, none of whom scored 20 points or more. It was an absolute team effort. They made 19 three-pointers to match a franchise record. We saw great performances from Ersan Ilyasova, from Eric Bledsoe, Malcolm Brogdon, who had struggled a little bit early in the season. He had a great game. Dante DiVincenzo off the bench was fantastic. I mean, Thon Maker kind of came back to after struggling or not really seeing a lot of minutes early in the season. He had another nice game. And, I mean, Chris Middleton was his usual self, making 4 of 9 from deep. So the Bucks, with an absolute, like, just a performance that really makes you feel good about the direction of things. Even, obviously, being undefeated, the only team to go 7-0 in franchise history, aside from the 1971-72 team that was the defending NBA champion. They started that year 17-1. Of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was a big part of that team. Oscar Robertson, Bob Dandridge. That's one of the great teams, one of the great great runs in Bucks history right there, if not the greatest run in Bucks history, the lone championship in 71, and then a pretty good follow-up, even though they didn't go to the finals that year. But this year's team, obviously looking like one that can go beyond the first round of the playoffs, which is where they've been stuck since 2001 with this incredible start. We'll go over a couple of these games here before we talk to Matt. Mentioned a little bit about that Toronto game. Just at times it was a little crazy. The tempo got a little bit out of hand. At times it was just playing the Bucks, looking like by far the better team. And again, it's hard to translate without Kawhi Leonard on the floor, without Giannis on the floor, who will hopefully be back for this game against Boston. But just an exceptional showing by and large. And the Bucks did not have to sweat this one out late. They definitely were the better team throughout most of that game. The previous outing, they had taken care of the Orlando Magic, 113-91. This was a pretty convincing showing as well. Not maybe quite as dominant as they had been the previous game against the Minnesota Timberwolves when they just eviscerated Minnesota. But this was a pretty great showing as well, 113-91, as I said. You saw some pretty typical performances here. I mean, Giannis had 21 points. He was followed up by Chris Middleton with 18. You had 16 from Brogdon, 15 from DiVincenzo, 11 from Brook Lopez. Again, a lot of balance there. A lot of guys contributing, and we saw, you know, Ilyasova with another double-digit rebound performance. He had 10. Giannis and Chris Middleton each with 7. So that was a pretty convincing victory, as it should be. They are playing teams that they're much better than, and they are winning by margins that show that. That's probably the best part of this thing. In past years, And even this year, you'll have this too. Pretty much every team has hiccups against lower tier teams. But at least to start the 2018-19 season, the Bucks have not struggled against teams that are, I don't want to say beneath them, but are teams that they should beat. And they are beating them handily. None more handily than against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Oh man, this was on the road. The Timberwolves, a team in a little bit of disrepair. Jimmy Butler famously wants out there. There's been talk that the Rockets might be willing to give up 4 first-round draft picks for him, which would be quite the haul. But this game was no contest. This is one of those rare NBA games that was legitimately over by halftime. It was 63-38 at the break, and the Bucks pull away for a 125-95 victory. Again, a lot of guys in double figures. Giannis with just, 15 and 12. I don't want to say that's pedestrian. That's very good. He also had 6 assists, but he doesn't need to be the superstar when you've got everybody hitting shots, everybody contributing. We saw 16 points from Middleton and Ilyasova, who didn't have the double-digit rebounds, but did have 16 points. 13 for Brogdon, 11 for Lopez. This is just a balance beautiful effort. Jimmy Butler, meanwhile, was just 2 of 11 from the field, finished with 4 points, unquestionably the best player on that Timberwolves team, although I guess you could argue Karl-Anthony Towns is not someone you would be able to sleep on there. He had 16 points and 7 boards and continues to be an intriguing player. Wonder if he winds up elsewhere as the season rolls on, if the Timberwolves really do strip it all down and try to start over after this run here with Tom Thibodeau does not seem to be working out. But the Bucks come out of Minnesota with a victory. They return home. They've won back-to-back games. And now they have to go back out on the road to face the Boston Celtics, which is going to be a pretty compelling battle between two teams that are seen as among the best in the Eastern Conference, certainly with Toronto and Philadelphia. Now that the Bucks have beaten two of those teams, Toronto, Philadelphia, and we'll have to, next up is the Celtics, the fourth and final of those top four teams in the East, or at least the perceived top four teams in the East. Could the Bucks end up 8-0 for the first time in franchise history and in the process beat the other three teams with which they are kind of competing for Eastern Conference dominance? Let's talk about some of that with our buddy Matt Velasquez. And here he is now, Matt Velasquez, covering the Milwaukee Bucks for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Matt, we saw a pretty great game if you're a Bucks fan on Monday night against the Toronto Raptors. Both teams were missing their superstar, Giannis and Kawhi Leonard, both on the bench. But I'm just curious your takeaway, the value of a game like that when you have, for lack of maybe a better word, the supporting casts of both teams going head-to-head, undefeated teams still, and the Bucks put on that show to truly pull away there at the end and tie the franchise record for three-pointers with 19, just look very, very strong. What does it say to you? What was sort of the takeaway in the aftermath of that game on Monday night?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway for the Bucks is just the way that they played without Giannis Antetokounmpo. I mean, in the past, you look at last year, the year before, and the Bucks were a non-playoff team in the time that Giannis was off the court, whether that was for full games or just while he was on the bench. At least the numbers that they put up during that time would indicate that they were basically a non-playoff team. And now, you know, they went into the game on Monday night with a lot of confidence, even without Giannis with them, because they all know exactly what they're supposed to do in Coach Mike Budenholzer's system. They know that the parts are interchangeable. Obviously, you know, you want to have Giannis out there. There may be the ability for Ersan Ilyasova to step up and start for him and do some of the same things he does, but no one does all of the things Giannis does, and no one provides all of the things Giannis does, especially, you know, on the defensive end where, you know, he can kind of roam around and do a lot of things that just athletically other players can't do. But as a team, they had confidence in their system, in each other, and, you know, knowing that they had the depth of talent to be able to, you know, still play well and play at a high level, you know, without Giannis with them. So I think that's the biggest takeaway. Obviously, we can't, you know, project anything about what this means for the rest of the season or for, you know, potential playoff matchups or seeding or anything like that. That's all just too far away. You know, the Raptors were without Kawhi Leonard, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, you know, a couple of their core guys. But the important thing is that the Bucks proved that even without Giannis, they're still a force to be reckoned with.
You mentioned Ersan. Let's talk about Ersan a little bit, because I think it definitely raised some eyebrows going into the season when the free agency period hit and the first move the Bucks made, like drop of midnight, they had Ersan signed and ready to go. And it really sort of, without going too deeply into it, looks pretty clearly at that point Jabari Parker was not coming back. And it's obviously not apples to apples to say, well, they selected Ersan over Jabari Parker. But early returns look great. I mean, like you said, Ersan can come off the bench and be effective. He's a double-digit rebound guy if he gets the minutes. He, again, with a big double-double in this game against Toronto. I mean, I don't know. Ersan's, I thought, an aging player, but he hasn't shown it. And then you see what Jabari has done in Chicago. His numbers are fine, but he's continued to struggle defensively. He probably isn't quite the transcendent player that anybody in the NBA thought he was going to be. This is looking like a pretty deft move by the Bucks brain trust to bring in Ersan and to have him really be their offseason priority, it seems like.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right in saying that, you know, trading Ersan and Jabari isn't exactly correct. But I mean, if we did look at it that way, I mean, it's a definite upgrade for the Bucks. At least at this point in the season, it's looking like that. Especially when you consider that Ersan is making $7 million a year, which you know, that that was considered to be high by some people over the summer. You know, 3 years, $21 million. Obviously, the third year there is a team option, so they can decide whether or not they want to keep him for the third year. But Jabari was going to command more than that. And when you compare the value of what Ersan Ilyasova is bringing versus what Jabari Parker potentially could bring, especially since the asking price eventually went up to $20 million, you can just see how Ilyasova just fits better in what they're doing. You know, Mike Budenholzer, who has coached him in the past in Atlanta, you know, he has a ton of trust and confidence in putting Ersan out on the court. You know, he just considers him a pro's pro, a guy who's going to do his job, you know, play his role, do exactly what the team needs him to do. He doesn't need the ball in his hands a ton. He's going to do the dirty work in terms of, you know, fighting for rebounds, setting screens, taking charges. He's not going to shoot really a lot of bad shots. He's going to stick around the three-point line. He's going to, you know, do a bunch of tip-ins at the rim and just really be solid. And that's something that the Bucks have been missing, is just that solid role player who's kind of a, you know, more often off the bench, but could also start in a pinch where you know exactly what you're getting, and he fits perfectly into the team dynamic. And so we saw that last night where he started for Giannis Antetokounmpo and immediately rattled off the first 5 points, took a charge early, really was just doing everything you'd expect him to do just when thrust into that starting position. And so, you know, he's going to be a key piece for the Bucks throughout the season, especially if he can stay healthy. He was a big part of what Philly did last year in making their final push towards being the 3 seed in the playoffs. You could tell how much they missed him, especially while they're still getting used to some of their new pieces like Mike Muscala, who were kind of like Ersan replacements. You know, those guys aren't playing at the level that Ersan is right now. You could see when the Bucks played them just how much they missed that. But yeah, he was just great last night and solid, as he's been all year.
So obviously, we still want Giannis to be in the lineup. And the concussion protocol is where he was at and was unable to play on Monday night. What is your sense? Concussions are tricky. You never really know how much time a player is going to miss. You don't know really, it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. But he was on the bench on Monday night. He seemed engaged in what was going on. What is your sense after the game about Giannis's availability going forward?
You know, I don't think we'll get any clear indication until Wednesday or Thursday at the earliest. The Bucks don't have a full practice today on Tuesday. They're doing mostly individual stuff, so that means there's no media availability. There'll be a practice on Wednesday, at which point we'll obviously ask for an update on Giannis, and my general expectation will be something along the lines of, you know, he's been able to do some stuff, you know, we don't fully know, we're taking it day by day, gotta talk to the doctors, and, you know, maybe we'll know more on Thursday heading into the game against Boston. You know, with concussions, sometimes, you know, symptoms aren't there immediately. You know, guys will be able to pass all the tests like Giannis was. He passed all the tests on Saturday night during that game against the Magic, which allowed him to return to the game. Obviously, you can question whether or not he should have returned to the game. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking that. But at that time, all the information from the medical professionals said he has passed the tests. There's no sufficient reason to keep him out. And then when he went back in on Sunday, for the team's, you know, practice sessions, he had symptoms. He had a headache. You know, he was reporting things that hadn't been reported. He couldn't pass the tests that he had previously passed, and that put him back in the concussion protocol. Every player is different. There's no set amount of time that he has to stay out. This isn't like the 7-day DL in baseball or something like that. Once he is able to pass all the NBA's benchmarks in terms of passing tests and consulting with physicians and things like that, he will be able to be cleared to play. But whether that's Thursday or whether that's later, it's still unclear as of right now.
So they head to Boston on Thursday. That's obviously another big game. It would be the third of sort of the big three in the Eastern Conference, aside from the Bucks, with wins already in their back pocket against Philadelphia and Toronto. Now that you've seen some of these teams play, and I'm sure you've kind of been aware of what Boston has done as well, where do you think the Bucks stack up? I mean, is it too early to say the Bucks clearly stack up with these teams and should absolutely be thought of as a team that can win the Eastern Conference? Are there still some questions you have before that need answering before you can definitively say, okay, that's definitely the case?
You know, I'm not going to go so far as to say that the Bucks, you know, are the favorite to win these. Obviously, you know, the Raptors are going to be a different team in games where Kawhi Leonard plays and when they get, you know, OG and Van Vliet back. And Boston has gotten off to a little bit of a slow start compared to expectations, but they're still loaded. They still have a ton of talent on that team and a lot of depth, and it's going to take some time to figure that out. But, you know, I feel like at some point we're going to look up and they're going to be on a huge winning streak and really putting it all together. But the Bucks, at least in my vantage point, are clearly a contender with those two teams. I think Philly has fallen off a little bit from last year, and maybe they're in that tier, maybe they're not. Time will tell. I wouldn't put them there right now, but I think the Raptors, Celtics, and Bucks are all kind of in the same tier, and at least based on what I've seen, should all be able to contend and keep up their level of play throughout the season, which would make it, you know, an interesting fight to the finish. It depends on, you know, really which teams want to go for it and want to get that higher seed or the highest possible seed in the playoffs. But if the Bucks keep playing the way they have, you know, they should definitely be in the mix with those teams throughout the season. And we'll learn a lot more about the Bucks over the coming week and a half or so as they obviously travel to Boston, come home for the Kings, and then they go west for a tough four-game road trip early in November.
Yeah, one of the big things I'm waiting for, if they beat Boston, is, well, will the Golden State Warriors have 10-1 t-shirts printed? Because at that point, the Bucks would have a chance to start the year 10-0. Of course, the Bucks snapping Golden State's streak a couple years ago. And I have a feeling Golden State has not forgotten the gesture from the fans with the t-shirts. If they have 10-1 t-shirts, you've got to get your hands on one, don't you?
Oh yeah, I mean that'd be interesting. And whether, no matter how that game goes, that'd be kind of cool. I wonder if Steph Curry, I know he was on the Bill Simmons podcast earlier this summer, and he said, you know, he wanted one of those 24-1 t-shirts from the Bucks, and I guess the Bucks sent him one. So does he wear that? I don't know. Like, I don't really know, but all I do know is that the Warriors, even though they aren't undefeated like the Bucks, man, they are looking really good. You know, obviously the talk of the NBA, instead of it being Bucks Raptors, which it might have been if Giannis had played, if Kawhi had played, I think that might have garnered more national attention. But while the Bucks were doing their thing, just the Warriors were absolutely demolishing the Bulls, and Klay Thompson made 14 threes, and just when you think about that team just playing at their peak. I know the Bulls aren't a defensive juggernaut by any stretch.
That's one way to put it. Yes,
but when the Warriors are playing at their peak, like, they're just such an incredible team, and I'm looking forward to seeing what the Bucks can do against them at Oracle when they go out there. I mean, it's a little ways away in terms of, you know, we got a few games before that, but I mean, I think that game will be a really, like, compelling watch.
Yeah, obviously you can't discount the Boston game or going to Portland, or even, I mean, at this point, you know, no NBA game is simple, but one would think they could beat the Kings at home, but obviously there's some games to get to before that. So you mentioned the Warriors, Klay Thompson's crazy night Monday, stealing any hopes of headlines from the Bucks-Raptors game. Let's play a little bit of a thought experiment, because in 2011, when Klay Thompson was drafted, he goes one pick after the Bucks selected Jimmer Fredette. It was going to always be a trade. I don't think Jimmer was ever going to play in Milwaukee, but that ends up being a trade for Tobias Harris. A lot of other players move around in that deal. That draft day deal, I think, brought the Bucks Steven Jackson, Sean Livingston, Beno Udrych, John Sammons, and Corey Maggette were sent elsewhere. It was a pretty big draft day deal, but at the time, there was some thought that they would take Klay Thompson. He was absolutely in the conversation, and I'm curious what you think in the alternate universe where the Bucks in 2011 take Klay Thompson instead, what that sort of trickle-down effect would have been. They draft Giannis 2 years later. I don't know if that would necessarily have precluded them from making that move again 2 years later, even if they had been a little bit of a better team in drafting a little bit later in the 2013 draft, but it's hard to really gauge how good Klay Thompson could have changed this, how much he could have changed this franchise, given that he is a little bit of a, considered kind of a second fiddle to Steph Curry in Oakland. But I'm curious, kind of, what do you think would have happened to the Bucks if they had just taken Klay Thompson like a lot of people thought they would that year?
Well, I think the answer that would probably make people the saddest would be, what if they just traded him like they did Tobias Harris for J.J. Redick? I mean,
oh no! Oh, the horror!
I mean, there's a distinct possibility that could have happened, right? Because the Bucks,
yeah,
I mean, totally. I don't think rookie Klay Thompson, you know, moves the needle so much for the Bucks, you know, at that point, that they end up being clearly, you know, a playoff team instead of battling to be a playoff team. And then maybe, you know, with the previous ownership's, you know, insistence on making the playoffs, maybe he just gets moved as a future asset, you know, to bring in a proven asset like J.J. Redick to try and bolster that playoff push. And we know how that all turned out. I mean, that's probably the worst possible scenario, where if the Bucks drafted Klay Thompson, then they just moved him like they did Tobias Harris. And obviously Tobias Harris has turned out to be a pretty strong player in his own regard. I mean, you look at him as he's probably the best player on the Clippers, or you can make that argument that he is the most talented player in the Clippers right now. You know, the team that really doesn't have a star, but just has a lot of like solid dudes, you know, so that's all kind of interesting. I mean, obviously the J.J. Redick trade didn't work out well for the Bucks, to put it lightly. I guess in this thought experiment of yours, like, it's possible the Bucks could have drafted Klay Thompson. Maybe he does play really well. Maybe his shooting as a rookie is good enough to warrant not trading for J.J. Redick. I think Giannis still could have been a thing. Of course, you know, then you'd have to get that same pick and everything kind of changes. It's definitely interesting. It's something that people will be talking about for, you know, much longer than we will. I mean, there's a lot of what ifs in the draft for the Bucks, especially in recent years, where their draft picks haven't panned out so well. Though rookie Dante DiVincenzo is off to a strong start this season, and Malcolm Brogdon, obviously the rookie of the year a couple of years ago, second round pick, is in the starting lineup and an everyday contributor. And Thon Maker just resurfaced last night, you know, because he's playing the Raptors. I mean, he always plays well against the Raptors, especially in Canada. You know, the Bucks draft picks have been much more aligned in recent years, and rightfully so. And when you look at the little bit they've gotten from DJ Wilson and the close to nothing they got for Rashad Vaughn, and just the injuries to Jabari Parker, but you know, the Bucks do have some guys who are right now out of their recent draft classes.
Yeah, we're gonna talk. I want to talk quickly about Dante and Thon Maker, but to go back to Klay Thompson, you also the environment of the NBA has changed, where three pointers have just really become emphasized here in the last couple of years. I don't know if Klay Thompson is free to shoot, you know, 14 three pointers in a game. You know, I don't know in past Bucks coaching regimes if we see Klay Thompson freed up to be the player that he is now in Golden State. I think you're right. I think that would be a tragedy of a different sort. Maybe not where they missed on a draft pick, but where they end up moving him or relegating him to some role where he is expendable, and then he comes out with another team and becomes the Klay Thompson we know today. So you mentioned though Thon and Dante. We talked about them on the last podcast, but looking really good. I wonder, because Thon Maker was hardly getting off the bench at all early in the season. Has his recent play, you think, bought him more time on the floor? And I don't know what else to say about Dante. You said it last week. He does a lot of things, and we're definitely seeing that. He does a lot of things. I mean, it's so early, but it's hard not to think, man, they really hit on their first-round draft pick, kind of an unconventional draft choice, and it's looking so good in the early going.
Yeah, I think starting with Dante, just they decided that they weren't drafting for upside. They were drafting for someone who could help them right now, and someone who is proven and who fit exactly what they needed and didn't need to develop before he was ready to play. And that's what Dante's been. I mean, he has been able to jump in as the first guard off the bench, consistently make shots, play solid defense, rebound, move the ball, just anything they ask of him, he's confident and able to do it. You know, we've seen that consistently. Looking at Thon, obviously, you know, last night was the first time that he got to kind of spread his wings a little bit. With Giannis out, Ersan moved up in the rotation, which meant Thon moved up in the rotation. And he was able to get some first half minutes. He said this in the past, but he mentioned last night too, that he kind of comes out a little overhyped. And it's not until that first time out, after he's been on the court, that he kind of settles in. And we saw a little bit of that. You know, he scored 11 points all in the first half, finished with 7 rebounds. I think his shot making is something that Budenholzer praised as something that really gave them a lift as a team there in the first half. So, you know, we'll see if he's able to sustain this. You know, even when Giannis comes back, the Bucks have gone to a deeper rotation, though that hasn't always included Thon Maker. Pat Connaughton's been the guy who's been the kind of the 10th guy to get off the bench. You know, but now with the way that Thon has kind of exerted himself over the past few games, you know, does he get a little bit more run, a little bit more of a chance? And if he does, I'm interested to see if they go back to the lineup where he played next to John Henson, nominally as the four, because you know, offensively, that's something that, like, okay, it can be fine, it can work. They space the floor, everybody knows their spots, they have their positions. But defensively, just to me, it just doesn't seem like he knows exactly what he's doing on, as well as he does when he's at the five. I think at the four, he has to defend different types of players. There's a different thought process when it comes to defending pick and rolls, or you know, helping off of the corners, or you're at different spots on the floor as a four and then a five, and I think that that's been an adjustment for him. But we'll see just how Mike Budenholzer decides to use him, and as of right now, even though it hasn't been perfect with him at the four, those lineups have been okay. They haven't lost a ton of ground with those lineups on the floor, so we'll just have to see how it goes.
His name is Matt Velasquez. He is the Brewers, or no, wait, the Bucks. I got to get my season straight, Matt. He's the Bucks Journal Sentinel beat reporter. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no Brewers. We'll let Rosiak and Hadrichor do all of that. That's totally fine with me.
Perfect. So he's the Bucks Journal Sentinel beat reporter. He's got you covered. The Bucks back in action on Thursday in Boston. That'll be a big one. Matt, always good chatting with you. We will talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you to Matt for joining us today. Hope you enjoy your Halloween. Enjoy the Bucks being a pretty good team. The Brewer season's over. The Packers are struggling. The Badgers are really struggling. The Packers maybe showing signs of life Sunday. I don't want to undersell them that they played okay against the Rams, the best team in the NFL, but they are not a team that you expect at this point to go to the Super Bowl. The Bucks might be the best team, the best thing going right now for Wisconsin sports fans. So this is the place to hear about it every week. We'll have the Bucks podcast every week during the season. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. Give us a review, a rating. Let us know what you think. You can also find us on Spotify and Stitcher as well, if you are an Android phone user. Feel free to give me some feedback on Twitter as well. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. You can find me on Twitter. Just look for my name at J.R.R.A.D.C.L.I.F.F.E. I'm sure you can find Matt Velasquez too if you want to check him out on Twitter. Hope you enjoy what we got for you. We'll be back again next week. Take care.